One of the harder struggles a marriage can face is when one person is clean and organized and their spouse is messy and disorganized. On today's classic edition of Family Talk, Dr. James Dobson interviews Sandra Felton on how to deal with a messy mate. And that program begins now.
Welcome to Family Talk.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson, and today we're going to wind the clock back and enjoy a classic program with my dad, Dr. James Dobson, and the founder of Messies Anonymous, Sandra Felton. Sandra is a gifted speaker and accomplished author who spends her time helping people who struggle to keep things in order. As you'll hear on today's program, there are many people who struggle with organization, and sometimes that can lead to the deterioration of a marriage and many other problems. Sandra has dedicated her life to creating unique ways to help people cope with messiness, and I know that all of our listeners are going to really appreciate what she has to say. But before we get to the program, I want you to know about an opportunity that you don't want to miss. For every donation we receive through the month of August, we'll send you a copy of a book that my dad says has made a generation of boys and girls wishing they could find him in a blind alley somewhere. The book is titled Dare to Discipline. And for this month only, we'll send you that book and the corresponding DVD from our brand new Building a Family Legacy film series. To take advantage of this exclusive offer, give today by calling us at 877-732-6825 or by clicking the tab at drjamesdobson.org. Here now is my dad, Dr. James Dobson, and Sandra Felton on today's classic edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
You must know something that the rest of the world is only discovering, and that is that there are an awful lot of people out there who have this problem.
Right. I get letters every day from people who are either messy and struggling to overcome it and want more help, or, now that my new book is out, from people who live with messies. But, of course, I got people who live with messies writing to me before, and that's one reason why I wrote the book, because they had their needs, too. Their houses were messy, but not because they were making them that way. They were just living with somebody who was so messy that they simply could not overcome it, you know?
Well, when you get people leaning in opposite directions in terms of their desire for order versus chaos, you can really get some incredible conflict, can't
you?
Yeah,
that's true, because people who are really neat are driven crazy by mess. And, you know, I figure for every messy, there are five people out there who are patiently or not so patiently living with them, and it's those people that that I wrote for.
Yeah, I have a relative, and I won't name who. It's not in my immediate family, but I have a relative who cannot leave the house in the morning with a drawer a half inch open. Everything has to be absolutely perfect. You can imagine when that kind of personality collides with one of these white tornadoes that comes through and just leaves everything shattered.
Right.
That the battles have only begun.
That's right. It causes a lot of personal conflict. I've talked to women who are messies, and I've asked them, which is more difficult to live with, another messy or a cleanie? Because some people have been married twice, and, you know, they've had the experience in both ways. And for those who have had that experience and who've told me, they said that living with a cleanie, that's what we call the other end of the spectrum, is easier than living with another messy. Because although you have personal conflicts, it's not as bad as both of you having the house as an enemy. But having said that, it's still very hard, and especially it's hard on the person who is organized. And that, of course, as they nag or whatever they do, makes it hard on the person who's a messy.
Let's get some basic definitions out for the folks, because some people didn't hear that earlier broadcast and don't really know what we mean by a messy. This is not just someone who gets busy. This is someone who is really disorganized in their approach to life, isn't
it? Oh, well, a lot of people, I guess everybody at some time or another, has a little touch of messiness in their life, just as everybody has a little touch of overeating every once in a while, you know. But not everybody has a food problem, and not everybody has a messy problem. But when we define a messy as a person who is chronically disorganized to such an extent that it it bothers them significantly. And they've tried to stop, mm-hmm. and they haven't been able to stop. And this has gone on for some time. So that those are kind of the criteria we use. And that sort of stayed.
Yes.
By putting it that way, it sort of stayed. But in the vernacular, it's a person who's really disorganized, who hates it, and who can't seem to stop.
They don't necessarily like to live in a pig pen.
No, nobody who's sane wants to live like that. I mean, Messies are wonderful people. Messies are frequently very creative people, frequently intelligent people, easygoing, fun to be with people. They are just, in my opinion, being a Messie, I don't want to say this, you know, in a self-serving way, but many Messies are really unusually talented and high-quality people. It's just that they have this weakness, and they don't like it. The people they live with don't like it, but it's a fact of their lives.
All right, now go to the other end of the continuum and describe a cleanie for us.
Well, cleanies I don't have much experience with. I think somebody else is going to have to write a book about those folks, but I do want to say that we don't encourage Messies to turn into cleanies. We don't encourage people to go from one end of the continuum, which doesn't work well, to go to another end of the continuum, which doesn't work well. What we want is for people to be average, successful housekeepers, and that's what we aim for.
Yeah. Let's look a little more closely at the Messie and what their frame of reference is. Does this start early in life? Is this the individual who in sixth grade has a notebook that is absolute chaos, that the assignments are mixed in with drawings and debris and clutter? Does this come out of a childhood? Is this a temperament, a long-term temperament?
It may be. Sometimes that's true. Sometimes you see it right from childhood. In my case, looking back, I was a Messie from childhood. But my mother kept me organized in such a way that I never noticed it. And so as long as I just concentrated on my school books and listened to the bells, and she got me off on time, things worked out really well for me. And as soon as I got married, then my whole world fell apart. I couldn't figure out what happened. Everything was disorganized and so forth. And for 23 years, I lived that way. So it didn't show up with me until that time. Now, other people, they can hold in there a little longer than I did. They can hold in till maybe the first child, and then it all falls apart. But some of them, as you suggest, when they're kids, they can't keep up with things. I know a Messie who, as a child, lost all of his books. Didn't even know they were lost until the teacher told him. But he lived in a state of confusion right from childhood. And I think that's true with most of us.
You overcame it, or at least learned to cope with it in your own case. You've referred to yourself as a Messie who has apparently dealt with it. In fact, I know you have, because that was the subject of our previous broadcast. Explain how.
Well, it's the same story as all of the stories that you hear about people who have addictions or whatever. There comes this time when they have a crisis experience, and that's what happened to me. And when I had this crisis experience, to make a long story short, the water in my kitchen sink started leaking underneath. And I had it full of papers and other debris and didn't know that it was leaking until it had leaked all the way through the bottom of the cabinet and had gone around and was coming out from under the stove. Now, this was the straw that broke
That's
the
your
cabinet.
First clue that you had a problem.
No, right? No. I had had clues all along. For 23 years, I'd been living with my house insulting me on a daily basis, and I was taking these insults. And, you know, I mean, I'd open the cabinet for the bathroom, and the medicine would fall out. Me, I'd put the stuff back up there again to fall out the next time. You know, I would try to go to school, and I couldn't find but one shoe. And my children, you know, I couldn't find the papers to send back that were supposed to be signed and in that day. And so I had been living this way for years, but it was just that final straw that I said, I'm not going to live this way anymore. And that was after 23 years.
Did your husband, Ivan, have anything to do with that? I mean, was he nagging you about it and whining about it and complaining about it?
Yes, he complained big time. Of all of our marriage problems, he and I argued most about the house. When you come home to a house that's friendly and welcoming and is serene because it's orderly, but if you come home to a house that's hostile, that if you're a woman and you've worked 8 hours and you come home and there are 8 more hours of work to do, that's pretty discouraging. That saps your energy. Mm-hmm. But coming home to a home that's orderly and beautiful, that gives you energy and refuels you for the next day.
I saw a study that was published a few years ago of what a man most wants from his home. You know, then all kinds of things that you can think of that might be on his list. At the top of the list was tranquility.
Mm-hmm.
When he comes home, he wants to open that door and that things are under control. They're tranquil. And I'm that way. I don't care if there's dust around. That doesn't bother me at all.
No, that's
but
right.
I don't like debris. I like order. And fortunately, Shirley does too. She's not what you'd call a compulsive cleanie, but she does like to keep order, and I'm sure glad she does, because I think it'd drive me crazy to live with somebody where the water was soaking out of the sink and coming out of the stove.
Well,
know?
No, I think that drive most people crazy, and it did, and it drove me crazy too, but understand that I was the messy, and I was even when I wanted to change, it was not that easy to do.
You have any clue as the psychological roots of some of this, Sandra? Surely you have thought about that. There are reasons why people behave as they do. Some of them may be just temperament.
Yes. In my book, Messy No More, that deals with causes, because people used to write to me and call me and say, you know, I read your other books and I'm trying to do it, but I don't know what's wrong with me. There must be something wrong with me. And so in order to help them sort of see through that and get over that hump and get down to changing, I wrote this book. And in the book, I suggested that some of the reasons might be simply right and left brain approaches to things. Some people like to take that approach, you know, and many messies, I'm sure, are right brain people. They see things globally and not sequentially, and that gives them a whole different view of organization. Mm-hmm. And then some people may be sanguines, if you want to look at the four temperaments in that way, you know. Mm-hmm. And they're happy-go-lucky and friendly and outgoing. And then some people like to think in other terms. You might look to the possibility of attention deficit disorder, that the person who's a messy is distracted. They get a half a job done and are distracted away to another job, and that leaves just little piles around in a different order. And so there are different reasons.
You know, I've hired probably 2,000 people through the years, either directly or indirectly through someone else, and I've developed some understandings of what makes a good employee for a certain kind of job and what doesn't. And what I've discovered is that people fall into two broad categories that are not unrelated to what we're talking about here. There is the kind of person that gets out of bed in the morning, gets into the shower, and then jumps out of the shower, wringing wet, and runs to a desk to write something down before they forget it, because they hang on to every detail in their lives. And their lives are ordered. And when it comes time for the income tax to be paid in April, they have all their receipts and all, you know, that kind of person.
Right.
Then there's the other kind of person who is often very social, very warm, very loving, a real friend type person who is disorganized in their personal life and does not work off a to-do list and kind of goes through life just sort of doing what feels right at the moment instead of juggling balls like an administrator has to do. What I've found is that there are two different kinds of jobs that those two different kinds of people do in an organization like this. You get a type A and a type B position, or a type B and a type A position, you've got disaster on your hands. You get an administrator who is responsible for many departments, who is the equivalent of a messy in the way he approaches his work, And he goes crazy, and you do too. He's always forgetting things. He doesn't answer memos. He loses memos, and he doesn't get his budget in on time. On the other hand, you get that kind of accounting personality, if we might call it that, over into one of those public relations positions, and that doesn't work either. And the main task I have had, the first thing I explore when I'm hiring somebody is which of those two types you lean toward, because you may be very successful in one type of role here and not in another. And it really does kind of boil down to a dichotomy there. Have you seen that?
That's right. Exactly. I certainly wouldn't hire a Messi to be my secretary. Mm-hmm. To balance me off, my creative, right-brained approach, I need somebody who is left-brained and organized in order to do that kind of work. But if
I'll take brain matter on either side, just so long as I can get it.
Right. But if you have a family, and they're just two, and they're dividing up the system between those two, sometimes they seek out each other to actually have those two different aspects mm-hmm. present in their home. And when they do that, then they have to live with the consequences of that kind of organization. The messy person who is creative and warm and so forth has got to please the organized, systematic one, and the systematic one has his problems because of the disorganization that tends to come along with that personality.
Well, that really leads us directly to the content of your book, When You Live with a Messy. So this is coming from the point of view primarily of the spouse and the frustrations that they have. And how do you deal with a husband or wife who would like to do it better, but can't seem to pull it off, who knows that he or she has a problem? Can be a man or a woman. It really, I don't know if it's gender related, but I doubt it. I've seen both of them be pretty messy. How in the world do they approach this flaw in temperament, if you want to call it that, without tearing up the marriage?
Well, I think I offer the same advice you offer in your book, Love Must Be Tough, and that is that you need to step back in terms of 12-step programs. You need to detach from the problem, not from the person. And that may mean several things. What it first of all means is you quit trying to change the person. If you had a person who smoked, say for instance, and you knew that was bad for them, and it was bad for the people around, no matter how important it was to you, you could not stop that person from smoking if they really wanted to. So I recommend that people stop trying to change the person and concentrate instead on changing the house. And that involves a couple of things. First of all, let me say that that if you have a person who is smoking, let's use that as an illustration, and they don't stop smoking, either they might want to and they can't, or they don't want to stop, they're going to keep on smoking, but you don't have to let them blow smoke in your face. And that's the approach we take with the house. They may keep on living whatever lifestyle they wish to, but they simply may not do it in a way that interferes with your living in the way you want to live. And if it's reasonable, you know what I mean? There's certain give and take you give on in all of marriages. But for one person to ruin another person's life with clutter is not reasonable. And so we recommend that they, first of all, change their minds about letting this continue. You see, the messies don't take care of themselves. But it's also true that the people that live with messies are not taking care of themselves if they let that mess continue. So the first thing is a change of mind, a change of approach, a change of thinking about themselves and saying, I will not let this continue to happen to me, similar to what you say in your book.
What I said in Love Must Be Tough is that there comes a time where whining and nagging and begging and pleading is of no value. There comes a time where you have to create a crisis that says, this is not acceptable. And maybe even pull back just a little bit until you get the attention of the other person on the problem that you're dealing with. Is that what you're talking about?
Exactly the same thing. The person who lives with a messy is tempted to whine, to beg, to threaten, to cajole, to do whatever, to try and get this house cleaned up. It will not do any good. If it does, all right, then you don't need my book. But in most cases, it will not.
It's very much like living with an overweight spouse.
Exactly.
You can nag the daylights out of them about what they eat, and it usually does not change anything.
That's right. In my book, I use an illustration I think has been used many times before about teaching a pig to sing. You don't want to try and teach a pig to sing because, in the first place, it won't work. In the second place, you'll look like an idiot. In the third place, it'll make the pig mad at you. So that's about all it does with a messy, you know. It doesn't help anything. It just makes it, it does do one thing, and I'll tell you what it does. If you can get to arguing about it enough, it takes the focus off of the house, off of the real problem, and puts it on something else. It puts it on your relationship, which is not where the focus ought to be. So many times people keep arguing as a way of avoiding the real problem, and the real problem is changing. My mother did what I think was really best for me, and that is, don't ask me how. I was so distracted at the time, I don't know how. But I didn't have any messy problem as a child because of her organization. So if you can, if you have a child who's amenable to this kind of thing, and you can give them the gift of order, and it doesn't cause a conflict, then I think that's a wonderful gift. She gave me that gift, and that's why when I started living the way I was living, I knew how bad it was, because I had lived the other way as well. However, you may have some children who use their room as a statement of their individuality, and they say, you know, this is my room. They may not say it out loud, but they feel this is my room and this is the way I want to live. And you can nag and you can do whatever you want to do. But the chances are that it's going to be an area of conflict and you may end up being the loser. I don't know. It doesn't even matter if you end up being the winner, because you still got this area of conflict that you had to go through to get the room clean. So I recommend the second step, which I recommend for husbands and wives or for children, and that is not create a crisis, but let the mess create its own crisis.
Yes.
That is, invite their friends over. You know, honey, you're 15 here. Why don't we have, you know, your friends over.
Your cleany friends.
Do whatever it takes to let the mess bring the pressure on them. You don't bring the pressure on them, but their way of life brings the pressure on them. And then there's also the aspect, I know a really organized little girl who went through an era of disorganization. I think she was just trying it on as a lifestyle to see if she liked it. Once she saw how unrewarding it was, she left it behind. But I think sometimes children do try on lifestyles.
Sandra, the clock gets away from us, it seems like, on some programs more quickly than others. And we're going to have a precipitous ending to this program. We're going to pick it up, if you will be so kind, next time right here, because I know there are messies and there are spouses of messies who are just hanging on your words, because it is a serious problem. It's caused a lot of conflict, a lot of pain for both members, as you've indicated.
Yes.
And we've got a lot more to say about it. We also have a gallery full of people, and we're going to let them ask you some questions next time. So if you'll just stay with us, we'll carry on.
Great.
Oh, let me tell you, I can relate to not being able to find something because of a mess. And it's definitely caused some tension in my marriage with Laura, and unfortunately, it's my fault. Also, we're out of time for today, and we'll have to pick up with part two tomorrow. We've been enjoying a classic interview between my dad and Sandra Felton here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson, and before we sign off for the day, I want to remind you about the special offer I mentioned at the top of the program. For every donation we receive through the month of August, we'll send you a copy of a book that my dad says has made a generation of boys and girls wishing they could find him in a blind alley somewhere. The book is titled Dare to Discipline. And for this month only, we'll send you that book and the corresponding DVD from our brand new Building a Family Legacy film series. To take advantage of this exclusive offer, Give today by calling us at 877-732-6825 or by clicking the tab at drjamesdobson.org. This is Ryan Dobson saying God bless, thanks for listening today, and we'll see you again next time for part two of our interview with Sandra Felton, right here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.
Hi everyone, Dr. Meg Meeker here. Are you on the go without much time to log into all of your social media pages? Twitter is a great way for staying informed on the things that matter to you with just a quick look at your phone. Follow Dr. James Dobson, FT, and receive great tips, resources, and information that is important to you in short and simple tweets. Again, that's Dr. James Dobson, capital F, capital T.